everyone, and welcome back to the Research Talks here from Stopbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. And I'm firmly back in European territory, back in the Netherlands, away from Panama. It's definitely a lot colder here than it was in Central America. But a nice week, really good week, actually. And I've come back, I think I mentioned last week, actually, I now feel bullish again. I think the concern of the Iran war situation that was sort of throwing a bit of a spanner in the works when I was seeing the similar people in the March event in Zurich, has that feeling seems to have gone. You just have to watch my On the Green video to get a sense of what people are thinking and how they're feeling. So yeah, I'm feeling quite bullish again about the sector in general. So that's all very good. What's been going on then this week? I don't see much that's been sort of catching my eye, really. Things seem to be sort of steady away. Oil's still around that $100 mark. Bitcoin hasn't really moved, and gold is sort of again holding around that 4,600 level. And I don't think anything on the market has really caught my eye. Unfortunately, of course, Ondo, which I am a big fan of, obviously had quite a terrible or an awful week, actually. I think it was, it's probably, I don't know, what was it at, about 15? So it's had about a 70% drop, I think, in total, on concerns of funding, which is a shame, actually. I think some of those contracts is taking a little while to materialize into something more significant. I mean, I'm still a fan of the company, and I think the technology is very good, but it's just a shame. The market, you know, it holds no prisoners, does it? And if it gets a sense of any kind of blood in the water, if you need money or you're struggling a little bit, you're going to be taken advantage of. But hopefully we'll catch up with someone under Craig, hopefully, and just get a feel for what's going on there. But that's the only thing that really was standing out to me. Anything else from your side, Dan, to report on?
Yeah, well, the Ondo update was pretty brutal, wasn't it? Like you say, it's a great product, so hopefully they can get that one back on track, and be good to hear from them. Yeah, I've been enjoying some of your content out of Panama, and it's good to hear that you still feel bullish after going to that. I certainly do as well. I guess the only thing at the moment is it's quite hard to marry that long-term bullishness with the week-to-week uncertainty in the markets. I mean, Monday was good. I had my portfolio actually looked pretty decent for once, but the last few days have been brutal because, you know, we've got a lot of brinkmanship around the US, Iran. We're not certain where that's going to head next. Hopefully, you know, next week, perhaps the week after, we'll start to move towards a resolution. It's not to say that there won't be long-term impacts. It's obviously going to affect the energy market for a long time. But if we can sort of get over, break the back of it, I guess, and start moving towards a resolution, then hopefully for the mining sector that we cover so much, we can get back into that bullish frame of mind that we were perhaps in a couple of months ago. Because, well, personally, that'd be great for my portfolio, but I think it would just be good to see, because it's been a long period of perhaps bearishness, and it's we want to see some of these companies do well, don't we?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that energy situation is going to improve even when things do calm down, let's say, or get better. I think unfortunately, that's here. I think KLM actually was cancelling a load of European flights. 160 European flights are just being cancelled. They're scheduled cancelled, not like, you know, tomorrow. It's like part of their full schedule because of fuel costs.
Really?
Yeah. Long haul is okay, but European ones, yeah. So, it was our fault, though. It's the Europeans' fault. You know, governments haven't protected, you know, the UK's got 2 days of gas storage or 3 days at best. You know, we had this problem a few years ago, didn't we, with when the pipeline was, you know, taken offline. It's our fault buying this stuff from, you know, nations who are not really trustworthy or friendly. We don't look after ourselves, and it's about time we did. Anyway, that's enough of the rant. Alan, over to you. What's going on?
It's been a bit of quietish week. I was in town yesterday, sitting with some colleagues and celebrating St. George's Day, of course, which was it was lovely in the sunshine. I think the standouts this week, obviously, ECR talking about the new Palio Gold acquisition, which I'll go into more detail in shortly. But quite an unusual statement from the Bank of England Deputy Governor.
This morning,
Sarah Breeden says she expects stock markets around the world to fall as share prices do not reflect the many risks facing the global economy, which is kind of strange for a governor to come out and be so bearish on this. But clearly, you know, she thinks feels the risks aren't priced in, and obviously, you know, the Iran situation seems to have calmed slightly, but nonetheless, there are many risks facing the economy. But of course, we're seeing the emergence of AI and AI technology, and you know, all of the millions that are pouring to there are equivalent to the dot-com boom back in the early noughties. So it's something that perhaps she, as the Bank of England governor, hasn't got her head around it, and the potential new marketplace there. So anyway, it's she said the markets could fall next week, 12 weeks time or 12 months time, but she's expecting a fall at some point. But of course, we know markets correct anyway. So yeah, it's going to come.
It will happen at some point. Yeah, it's of course when, isn't it? That's the thing. Yeah. You know, you can make this statement, you can be very, very early on it. I mean, yeah, of course it will at some point. And again, some of the vibes I was getting from some of the people at SMI was, yeah, that will happen. You will see like the rotation from tech into tangibles. You want to check out actually Wasif Latif from Samaya Partners. There's actually a long form interview coming out from Stockbox. His return to tangibles theories is brilliant. I think it's absolutely brilliant. And it will take a little bit of time to play out, but it's just starting. So yeah, we might, you know, as of 2008, we might see that that global kind of retraction before commodities come out. We just have to try and weather that storm. I mean, that's what happened last time. Doesn't mean it'll happen again. But I think there is, it's just good to be concerned, right? Because there are high valuations in these tech companies. And, you know, obviously it was mortgages in 2008. This time it seems like it might be sort of private credit, you know, because there's all these non-banks basically and who are lending, and it's not really regulated. It's always the same thing. If something's not regulated, then there's derivatives on derivatives on derivatives, and it just gets all messy. Mm. And also I think consumer debt is pretty bad.
Yeah.
Particularly in the UK and the United States. And as I've talked about before, the housing crisis in the Netherlands is insane. They don't have much debt here, but the housing crisis is insane. And in my opinion, that just has to correct, because they are still overbidding against multiple different people, just guessing an extra 50 grand on top of the asking price. Wow. You know, I mean, I just think this is insane, you know, and that just, in my opinion, that just cannot continue, because it's insanity.
That's
and people are really going to get hurt. Yeah, it's not sustainable, is it? And it's been going on for years. So, yeah, when these things happen, it's got to correct, right? It's just madness. So anyway, that will happen at some point. No one knows when. In the meantime, we have to just carry on, don't we, effectively? I mean, yeah. I think Warren Buffett is in a load of cash, but we've said that before for a while. He's sort of preparing, I think, for buying stuff on the cheap.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting that she's come out and said that. I hadn't seen that before you mentioned it, Alan. That's, it's not, like we say, we do expect corrections and markets have been running high, but it's not great to see that. But I guess I'm thinking, like, and I imagine a lot of people listening will use their ISA allowance for investing in the broader stock market. That's what I tend to do. And I don't generally try and time the market with that. I try and just average it. But if it does make you think, doesn't it? If we do think there is going to be a correction, is it worth just waiting and sitting in cash for a bit before and trying to take advantage of a drop if we think it's so inevitable?
Yeah, I think that's a very good call down. I think you know, as Mark mentioned, it's the biggest or the risk factor comes from this private credit, which is basically funds and very high net worths that have mimicked the roles of banks to lend to businesses, and that market's gone from nothing to something like $2.5 trillion over the past 15 to 20 years, and that's where she feels the risks lie, and they could well lie there. But I think if anyone's got any spare cash, you know, it might be a good time to just sit on it and just watch the market. But of course, at the end of the market that we're discussing, it's not really a factor. You know, there might be some movement, but you won't see the same sort of boom as you'll see across the wider indices.
No, it's volatile all the time rather than
persistent volatility.
No, you should never try. I don't think you'd ever try. You're right. Never. I would never try and time the market. You just spread your risk around where you can. And if you want to be really clever, try to be clever about it. Weight in different, you know, have heavy weightings in different areas at different times, depending on what you think, what you're feeling. But at the end of the day, you know, even if you hold a lot of cash, we know inflation's running high. War is by its very nature inflationary. And the only way the US is going to sort this problem out with their debt and their deficit is by inflation. They can't, rates are not going to increase because they can't. So, yeah, you keep a load of cash, you'll come back in a few years' time, it'll be worth a lot less.
What
do you do? I mean, you know, gold is probably your only the safest one, right? It's just a whole load of gold.
Seems that way right now, yeah. And it's not like there's any accounts out there paying interest in excess of inflation right now.
No, so,
no.
Yeah, your options are pretty limited to preserve capital right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, let's talk about some stocks. And so, first, Development Resources. Dan, I know you were speaking to Tristan Potas this week. What's been going on?
Yeah, I wanted to come back to FDR. This is a company I've spoken about on here a few times before. And like you say, I spoke to Tristan twice this week following a couple of updates out of the Celta project. So I think it's fair to say this is one that's been well off the market's radar for a while now. After the drilling at Wallau last summer didn't come in as hoped, interest faded away fairly quickly. But, you know, in the meantime, the company's taken stock, it's knuckled down, and it's quietly been doing the work it needed to do to move its other project, Celta, towards drilling. And at a market cap of just 3.6 million, it might be a little bit lower right now, but that was while I was researching. I think that could make this an interesting point to start paying attention again. So, yeah, like I said, the main focus right now is clearly Celta, which is in Australia's Northern Territory, specifically the Lander West gold target. So what FDR's been doing there is steadily improving its understanding of the geology and building the data it needs to decide where to ultimately drill. Started with desktop work, which highlighted Lander West as a priority area. Then came airborne and radiometric surveys, which improved the company's understanding, structures in the area. And this week, the company completed a GAIP survey, which is designed to identify chargeability and resistivity in the ground. So this is still early stage exploration, but FDR is doing the right things in the right order to work towards a sensible drilling program. And as Tristan said to me this week, the goal is to bring all those data sets together. So the geochemistry, the aeromagnetic work, the anomalies they've found, and now that GAIP data to identify some like really compelling targets. A big part of the excitement here is that the company believes it has traced the Stafford gold trend onto its own ground, which is a known gold-bearing trend in the region. So, you know, the indication there is that the same system could extend into FDR's own license area. So again, this is not random target generation. It's a case of tying together multiple data sets and looking for a continuation of a known mineralized trend and then drilling it intelligently. And by intelligently, I mean making sure it's informed by as much work as possible to maximize chances of success. The other important development that came out of Celta this week was the grant of the environmental mining license. So again, this might not sound that exciting on its own, but it's a practical step forward. It means FDR now has the environmental approval in place and is working through the final steps needed to get that drill program moving. What Tristan said in the interview, once the notice to commence comes through, that really means that's basically the final step before they can get drilling. And I asked him about timing, and he said the company's indicative operational timeline still has them drilling around the middle of this year. So those things obviously can move a little bit. They can be sooner, maybe push back a bit. But I think the key point for me is that this is not a vague, distant plan anymore. The company is clearly trying to line up a mid-year drill start, and Tristan himself will be back out in Australia in May, he said, to help with pre-mobilization work and make sure everything is ready. We also found out this week that there's possibility of co-funding support for the drilling, with FDR having applied under the Northern Territory government scheme, which could help stretch the budget further. We'll find out soon if it's successful. But if it is, and I think there's a good chance it will be, then it also, you know, sort of sets a precedent for getting more support as it continues to drill moving forward. That's my read anyway. That's not what Tristan said, but you can sort of put the things together there. So I've talked about Celtic's gold potential a fair amount so far, but that isn't all the project's about at all. There's also rare earths exploration underway, with earlier stream sediment work narrowing target areas significantly, returning encouraging anomalous readings. And there's also lithium potential at an area called Hawkshead, which sits less than a kilometre from a neighbouring large discovery. So gold's clearly the near-term focus, but there's other angles to Celtic as well there. And just briefly on Wallawa, because that still matters a lot as well. So yes, the drilling disappointed there last year, but FDR hasn't walked away from the broader opportunity at all here. It's continued to build out its position, and it does intend to return and go after that original Javier on style thesis that it was targeting last year. The drill just didn't work out as planned. So Wallawa remains part of the long-term picture, even if Celta is where the nearer turn action perhaps is for now. So when you bring it all together, I think this is a company that's been largely ignored by the market for a while, but it's been quietly advancing multiple exploration angles and, you know, advancing Celta towards drilling. So it's obviously very speculative still. We don't know what the drilling exploration will find. But we do know, perhaps a little cynically on my part, that anticipation often starts to build before results arrive, but once a company gets closer to the drill pit. So I think part of the opportunity here is that interest can start to build ahead of drilling, and from such a low valuation, that alone can sometimes be enough to bring a stop back to life and make it worth positioning early. We've already seen over the last couple of days a bit of interest return to FDR. But beyond that, the bigger opportunity is not just a speculative move before the drill bit turns. It's that, you know, the gold work the company's been doing at Celta and more broadly across the project on rare earths and soon lithium could also start to yield something really meaningful in its own right. And if that happens, you know, if drilling begins to validate the model and the broader exploration work starts to produce results also, then 3.6 million may end up looking like a very modest starting point. So it's one I have a position in, and it's one I'm excited about over the next few months, and looking forward to speaking to Tristan more as they continue to make progress towards drilling, and hopefully when he's out there, we can get an on-site interview as well.
Yes, well, he likes to go out, doesn't he, on site? We like to catch up with him when he's out there. So this survey that was done in this GAIP, that will inform sort of some targets for later in the year. Is that the idea?
Yeah, so they're layering that up with all the other work they've done already. And, you know, when signs of prospectivity on each data set line up, that's okay. Those are the areas you want to drill. That's my understanding as a non-geologist.
Yeah, okay.
So I think they're in the process of putting that all together now. So
okay.
Hopefully mid-year for drilling there.
Yeah, okay. So news flow to come would be basically interpreting these results and effectively aligning targets. So that's what we can look forward to, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah. And like I said, you get more interest as you move towards drilling. That's what the market likes to see.
And then exactly.
There's the broader potential for the results to be
exactly
significant. So we'll see.
We'll see. Good, excellent. Okay, well, also in Australia, ECR Minerals, Alan Green.
ECR Minerals, just to say there, Dan, on FDR, I too am a shareholder and also have some warrants too. So very excited about the potential there. Obviously, the initial draw didn't work out as planned, but, you know, there's everything to play for. And I think they've got a really exciting portfolio of assets. But ECR anyway. So ECR shares are currently trading 0.27p, have been as high as 0.44p. and as low as 0.16p on the year. Market cap of just under 9 million, which is, I think, derisory for the portfolio of assets the company had before announcing this major acquisition of Paleo Gold. And that, of course, was announced at the start of the week. A huge change for the company and a huge moment in its evolution, I think, to become a pan-Australian gold explorer and producer. So the company's got 3 billion 290,888,016 shares in issue at the moment. The Palio Gold acquisition is, it doesn't involve any fundraise. There's no fundraising at all. It involves the potential issue of up to 1,035,000,000 shares. So that is contingent on, well, there's an initial 621 million shares taking that will replace the Palio Gold share capital. So that's as a result of the acquisition. And then there are two elements which are related to production at the Maddens Gold Mine, which I'll come onto in a second, namely 5 million Australian dollars in revenue. There's a further 207 million shares issued, and then 10 million Australian dollars in revenue the year after, a further 207 million shares are issued. So that leads to a total of just over 1 billion shares. So the acquisition is a group of assets. The standout asset is the Maddens Flat group of mines. This is up in North Queensland, Australia, where there is a camp and a mine set on the banks of the West Normanby River, which is accessible by road from Cairns, and it's also accessible by helicopter too. There are six mining lease sites, mining's previously taken place there, the Maddens Underground Mine, the Brothers, the Sisters, Clyde Underground Mine, Taylor's Mine, and the fantastically named You Can Tell Us. So this lease covers the camp, the processing plant, a tailings dam, three freshwater dams, a workshop, and also storage sheds as well. And it includes an exploration permit over 50 square kilometres to undertake exploration. The deal basically provides that ECR will invest $1 million in the Maddens Underground Mine as part of the options exercise. As part of that development work, they will extend the underground mine decline another 120 meters to open up to the next level. Historical grades from previous mining activities there, the management of Palio Gold and the board believe that the potential is there to generate around 2,500 ounces of gold, and that could start within 3 to 6 months. So it's very near term in terms of production. The acquisition also includes the Saltbush project in southern Australia, and here there is surface outcropping. There's ore at surface. Tested at and sampled at over 6 grams per ton, individual assays as high as 39 grams per ton of gold, and there are plans to develop Saltbush into a mine by way of a shallow open cut dip to some 20 meters in depth, and they will conduct the mining using a vat leach technology. And the final part of this jigsaw is the Tuckanarra project, which is in Western Australia, which covers a huge area of just over 4,000 hectares. The Tuckanarra project sited about 30 kilometres from the town of Kew in the Murchison Goldfield district in Western Australia. The Goldfield mineral zones there are a series of mafic and interbanded mafic and ultramafic iron formations, variable components there of minor shale also. And this is sited close to Odyssey Gold's project, which has announced, and Odyssey announced a total JORC resource of 407,000 ounces of gold, and that's right on the boundary of the Tuckanarra project site. So, again, some very strong near-term potential there too. As I say, it's a fully funded transaction, no equity raise, and the deferred consideration that I mentioned at the start is it's structured so that it matches the timing of the expected production at Maddens Underground Mine. Now, given everything that was happening at Raglan, and of course that is still progressing as well, I think a lot of investors have been saying, "Wow, this looks great, but why this? You know, what's happening with ECR?" Well, it's part of a plan to develop and evolve ECR into a pan-Australian producer and explorer. And investors will also have noted the recent appointments to the board, the new directors that have been brought in. Of course, Christopher Gibbs, very experienced director, ran American Rare Earths for some time. And also, of course, Mike Parker, the geologist there, he was very much involved at First Quantum Minerals in Africa. And this enlarged team will be overseeing this development. With Paleo Gold comes a management team and a team of people to operate the mine. So everything is in place to commence production at Maddens. And of course, across this portfolio of assets, you also have the $75 million worth of tax losses to be deployed. So there's an opportunity there, I think, to really maximize those. Now, I mentioned Raglan. Of course, the ramp up at Raglan is underway now with gold bearing test gravels, production expected the next couple of months. And also that will be followed by the development of the alluvial gold mine at Blue Mountain, which will produce far greater volumes than Raglan. So that's basically plug and play, and will start to generate revenues in the next few months. Now, of course, we have ECR's other projects too. You have the Lulworth project, which is also in Queensland. That's close to the historically rich centre of Charters Towers. And of course, drilling there in September last year identified strong gold grades and silver grades at the Ungulterian Gorge Creek West prospects. This is a particular interest too, because the Geological Survey of Queensland have been following the progress of Adam Jones and the team on the ground there, and they have come in to participate and to undertake an evaluation of the critical minerals potential at Lulworth, remembering, of course, that some rare earth minerals were also noted at Lulworth too. And then, of course, we go further south to Victoria, where the Creswick projects, the proposed joint venture there with Bold Gold, where Bold Gold will take on all responsibilities for any expenditure on the Creswick licenses during the joint venture period, up to $3 million. And once that's undertaken, it'll earn a maximum interest of 80% in the project. There's Bayliston, of course. Antimony was a very high-grade antimony discovery was made there a year or so ago. And then, of course, the company announced late last year the Tambo license. A new license was awarded to the company, which extends the project area. Two tenements covering a strike area of some 47 kilometres, gold, tungsten, copper, all historically reported in the Tambo South licence area. And again, an often overlooked asset that's within the ECR portfolio, there's a royalty interest of up to $2 million over the Avoca and Timor projects. They were sold to Leviathan Metals Corporation a while back, and Leviathan has entered into an agreement to sell the Timor Gold Project to the AU Gold Corporation, which is a TSX-listed company. And ECR has consented to the assignment of that royalty interest to Australia, to AU Gold Corporation. And, of course, it will get a royalty interest potentially up to $2 million should they go into production. So, in summary, ECR now has a portfolio of 10 exploration development stage projects across four Australian states, three mine development projects expected to be in production this year, and a fourth next year. So this company is on the verge of completely changing and evolving into a much larger entity. And I think there's a real opportunity, you know, at 0.27p. Yes, those shares are going to be issued, but that's going to be matched by production. So if you like, the revenues from production will take up the slack with the additional shares issued. So I think there's huge potential, and I think we're going to see Christopher Gibbs and Mike Parker really start to come into their own as the year progresses.
Good. Excellent. Okay. Thank you, Alan. Yeah, I know we've been following ECR for quite a while. Of course, some management changes and move arounds recently, but good to get an update there on what's going on. And yeah, on track, I guess, as far as you're feeling.
Yes, very much so. Very much so.
Good. Excellent. Okay. So Dan, one of my favourite stocks, Alterna Rare Earths. I know you interviewed Cedric recently. Normally I would do that, but I think I was probably away at the time. So, how was that interview? What's your take on Alterna?
Yeah, we last covered them in, I think it was like early to mid-February, when we were talking about the fact that the company had secured US government support and the, as well as the work underway at Monte Muambe in Mozambique. So at the time, my argument was this was already shaping up as a particularly strong story. We had a defined rare earths project with additional fluorspar and gallium upside, and there's plenty of work underway to better understand the potential for all the different minerals that are presenting themselves. And crucially, there was that confirmation of US interest. It just hadn't yet been formalized. So, since then, the shares have moved up around 30%, but more importantly, the story itself, in my view, has also strengthened significantly. And even after that move at around an 18 million market cap, it really does look modest relative to what's being delivered, in my opinion. So if we just run through what's happened. First, the US government support has now been formalized. Altona has signed the agreement with the US TDA, providing 1.875 million of non-dilutive funding. And this isn't just vague strategic support. It funds a defined work program for a rare earths project pre-feasibility study covering drilling for representative metallurgical samples, processing, test work, beneficiation, hydrometallurgy studies, environmental and commercial studies, and also engagement with potential US offtake partners. So this is a proper pre-feasibility work stream targeting one of the biggest risks in rare earths projects, which is that processing. You need to get that right. So the fact this work is being externally funded and tied into US strategic priorities is a really meaningful step forward. And while that initial grant is very significant in itself, I think it's the potential for further support that down the line as a project continues to advance that looks really exciting here. So the second development is the company's move onto the OTC market in the US, where it's now trading under the ticker ANRCF, I believe. So on its own, I don't think that's transformational necessarily, but in the context of growing US involvement, it does make a lot of sense. It opens access to US investors, increases visibility, and aligns the company with the market most focused on securing these materials. So that US investor interest is unlikely to come in overnight. That's just, we see that, don't we, with every company that lists on the OTC. It takes a little while to warm up, I guess. And I think it's certainly likely to grow over time if Altona keeps delivering. So the next update is that we've had results from the fluorspar and gallium campaign, and these were strong. We're going to get into the individual assays because I'm no expert on the fluorspar market. But what Altona did say is that it's hit record intercepts from surface, and it assured us that it's hit consistent commercial grade fluorspar at Monte Muambe, which supports the idea that fluorspar could become a standalone development opportunity. So yeah, Monte Muambe is not just a rare earth story. There is potential for a second commercial product, which should support project economics and also provide a more near-term development route. And that campaign also confirmed gallium mineralization with, again, consistent intercepts averaging around 18 meters and a weighted grade of around 63 grams per ton gallium oxide. So on that front, metallurgical work is now underway to assess whether that gallium can be recovered from fluorspar processing. So again, an additional value emerging from the same system. And then finally, which is what I spoke to Cedric about last week, we've had the update on heavy rare earth elements. So this doesn't replace the core story, which is that, I guess, the fluorspar and that separate rare earths deposit. But it does strengthen it. Cedric made this point when I spoke to him. Monte Muambe is primarily a magnet rare earth project focused on neodymium and praseodymium. Sorry if I've pronounced those incorrectly.
Praseodymium.
There you go. Thanks, Mark. Yeah. So the identification of a heavy rare earth enriched profile on that same deposit where the fluorspar and gallium is being found adds another layer of strategic importance. As Cedric was saying, heavy rare earths are more valuable and critical for things like defense applications and high performance magnets. So again, this feeds into the same theme of increasing strategic relevance and really adds weight to the project through the lens of that ongoing US government support. So you bring it all together. Altona was already in a strong position when we last covered it and has since delivered across multiple fronts. It's formalized that US government backing, started a funded pre-feasibility work program, expanded access to the US, delivered those good blue spot gallium results, and added further upside with the heavy rare earths. And yet it still has a market cap of just £18 million. So there's still a lot of work to do, obviously. This is an early stage development story for now. The project has to move through all the necessary technical stages on each front, the rare earths, the gallium, etc. But the difference now is that Altona is actively working through that progress, that process with external funding and clear alignment to US strategic priorities. So I think what I'm going to be looking out for there over the next few months is progress on that US-funded work program, further metallurgical and processing results, and, you know, continued advancement towards pre-feasibility. So, you know, just to sum up, while the shares have already moved, the story has improved as well. I think from £18 million right now, if Altona keeps executing, there's a clear case that the market has further to go in recognizing that progress.
Good. Excellent. No, it's very good. And I know they're going to get going on with a bit of a big US or North America push, which is great. And the OTC is only the start of that journey. So, yeah, really, really good. Okay, well, let's finish off. Manolet Partners, Alan?
Manolet Partners. We've spoken, of course, about AIM-listed Manolet Partners in the past. The epic code is MANO. Shares have traded as high as 118 pence on the year and as low as 43p. Currently at 53.5 pence. Giving the company a market cap of 22 million. And the shares have not had a good year. If you look at the year's chart, you'll see we had that peak back in September last year of 117, 118 pence. And then it's just kind of been downhill since, really. And there's little or no reason that I can see for this other than the departure of the founder, Steve Cooklin. And I think Steve Cooklin was such a pivotal character in the development of the company that his successor, who Mina Holton, who he'd worked with for years, is still kind of picking up the reins as she moves forward. But anyway, Manolet is the UK's leading insolvency litigation financing company, and it's different from other litigation funders because it takes on all the risk in every case. And it works a three-way partnership with insolvency practitioners and their lawyers. And it always works with the IPs or the insolvency practitioner's choice of lawyer to ensure that these claims are pursued and resolved. They'll pay large upfront cash payments to basically finance the case and relieve any pressure of unpaid bills, and also to finance further investigation work to close out or successfully close out the claim. So since 2009, the company's engaged with hundreds of insolvency practitioners, their legal advisors, and there's a very strong team in place to oversee that progress. And probably Manolet gets overlooked because it's not a sexy sector like mining or helium or one of those currently sort of one of those sectors that currently has the zeitgeist. It's just in this area, and of course I think Steve Cooklin was important to that because he was very much the voice of the company. But Mina Holton's done a good job since she came in, and that was August last year. And also last year, we saw the appointment of Will Sawyer. And Will Sawyer is a former board member at Zinc Media Group, also ITN Productions. He joined as CFO last year. Mm-hmm. And the team are building, and they're every time they announce results, we see, cases or forward bookings at more or less record levels. And indeed, that was very much the case this morning. So we just had a trading update out. This is the full year trading update ahead of the full year numbers, which will be reported later in the year. And the company reported a very strong second half, full year 26 realized revenues of 28 million. slightly down from last year. That was 29.5 million, but very much in line with plan. Gross cash receipts are well up to 26.6 million from 25.5 million last year. Net debt about the same as last year at 11 million. But the forward order book is significantly higher, with 67 million already booked in compared to 49 million last year. And the company is very confident in the potential for increased profits and revenues, and also the general momentum in the business. So this is very much, the company is very much a one-trick pony, if you like, but it's a hugely lucrative area. It's the market has huge potential, and there's a very strong team in place to, I think, help expand the business and drive the business harder. So looking at the chart, you know, the company is pretty well just off its year lows at the moment, and I think the update this morning, the trading update in the run up to full year figures, warrants a higher valuation than we're currently seeing. I mean, when we first looked at this company, it was getting on for double the valuation it is now. So, you know, I'm sure we're going to see a turnaround at some point, and that goodwill run up to the full year numbers.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much, Alan and Dan, of course, as always, for your time. See what next week brings, and we'll speak in a week's time.
Indeed. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Have a good weekend.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programmes at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.